Welcome back to another episode of Icy Takes with Big Dave, Zach, and Jeff. As you can tell, Dave could not make it this week. I guess he had a scheduling conflict. So you just have Jeff and Zach with you this week. Zach, how are we doing today?
I'm doing better now knowing that our showtime is going to be cut in half. I mean, no offense to Dave, but how about you, Jeff?
Oh, not bad. I'm just sitting in my beautiful apartment on top of the Squirrel Tunnel. And the Philadelphia Flyers got eliminated Saturday. We'll get into that later. But in honor of the Flyers getting eliminated, I am drinking a beer out of Philadelphia. As Dave likes to always mention the beers that we're drinking and everything. I'm drinking a beer from Yards Brewing. It's a Thomas Jefferson Golden Ale. So here's to you, Philadelphia, you scumbags. Only 16 shots on net, but we'll get into that later. How's the Labor Day weekend? How was Zach's cookouts and everything? You're always having great food on the holiday weekend. So enlighten us what you were having on your cuisine.
Well, I mean, it started kind of Friday. As always, we have some buddies there for rewatch whatever hockey games. Great to have two game sevens, which we'll get into in a little bit. But yeah, watched some hockey on Friday. Definitely pounded some beers. Got another order in of some great stuff from Hitchhiker Brewing. Shout them out real quick. Yeah, and then what did we end up making for dinner on Friday? I think Friday was American Classic night, so we just did hot dogs and burgers.
Nice. On the grill?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, only way to do it.
Absolutely. Saturday was like the Sabbath day, the day of rest. Went up to Autumn's on Sunday. I think I made a steak on Sunday. And then yesterday I did, in honor of Labor Day, did a burger on an everything bun, which incredible seasoning. I cooked some bacon to throw on top of that burger, melted a couple slices of pepper jack in it, and then used some of the Berman's, it's like A1, like knockoff steak sauce from Aldi, and topped that burger off real nice. I always feel obligated to have a little bit of corn on the cob on these holidays, like Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July. So I had some
local,
corn on the cob.
Of course.
There's no other way to eat corn on the cob. That's why I just can't wait to get to July when the local stuff starts coming out. And then what else? Oh, my mom made some mac and cheese. She sent up with me a 5-cheese mac and cheese recipe that she actually got from Disney. It was fire. Had the homemade breadcrumbs built on top. Not a big deal. And then we finished that with some grilled chicken that I had. One of the most easiest things I've made is literally just take a piece of chicken out 2 hours before you decide to grill it, and then it's good to go. You slap it on the grill for about, say, 10 minutes, give or take, and then it's good to go.
There you go. Wow, yeah. It sounds like you're eating good over the weekend.
Absolutely. How about yourself? I mean, I feel like I steal all the thunder with my food takes, so maybe I should have let you go. Yeah, well, I guess you're going in the right spot now, so hopefully you did better than me.
Yeah, so my girlfriend spent the weekend at the apartment on top of the Squirrel Tunnel. So Friday night she just came over. We did, what did we do Friday? I think she just came over and spent the night. It was like a relaxing night. Didn't really do anything too crazy. And, we met some of her friends down in Export at Helltown Brewing. Had a couple beers with one of her friends I just met for the first time. So it was nice meeting her. It was a nice relaxing Friday night to kick off the weekend. Might've gotten a little buzzed up a little bit, but we were all good. The next day we went up to my aunt and uncle's cabin, or I shouldn't say cabin. It's actually their trailer. They go to like one of those like camping resorts kind of that you'll see around here. Spent the day up there, had some pool action. Some Pink Whitneys were flying around a little bit.
How are you?
Yep. There you go. What, you're welcome for the free ad. And yeah, had the campfire late at night. It was a nice little relaxing night. And then Sunday was just the ultimate relaxation because we did drink a bunch on Saturday. So we kind of took it easy. She made dinner. It was like she's going to kill me that I don't know what it's called, but it was like a chicken, cheese, gravy, broccoli, cool, stuffing, like casserole.
Wow.
And if like it tasted so much like Thanksgiving, it wasn't even funny. Like even the chicken tasted like that taste that you get from like turkey when it's like all mixed with everything. So we had that on Sunday, and then we went to her dad's house for like a little family cookout slash get together. We played some bocce. Her dad had an unbelievable quote when we were getting ready to play. So like they were throwing around the bocce balls and everything as like a warm up, get used to the weight and everything. And then you know, I went to go get another beer as they're doing this, and they're like, "Okay, let's get going, let's get ready to play." And I'm like, "Well, whoa, easy here. Don't I get a warm up? I mean, you know, it's kind of unfair." And he's on like the other end of the yard. They got like a not a ton of land, but it's like really spaced out well. Just from like literally the other side of the yard, you just hear, "You're an athlete. You don't need a warm up." And it got everybody laughing because, like, anytime, like, I do, like, the, like, you go to grab something and you juggle it, like, a couple times, but you, like, still catch it. Like, immediately, yeah. I just yell, like, athlete. Like just, like, a sarcastic kind of get me of a laugh or whatever. And just, like, the fact that he jumped on that and called me that, I was dying. I thought it was hilarious because I love when her family just, like, jokingly chirps me a little bit because it kind of keeps me on my toes a little bit and kind of makes you feel like part of the group or whatever. So yeah, that was the Labor Day weekend. Nothing too crazy. A lot of family and a lot of drinks. So that's my kind of Labor Day weekend.
I want to hear more about this this Thanksgiving meal. To be honest, it sounds like, if I have this correct, it sounds almost like the KFC famous bowl, but Thanksgiving edition.
Kind of, yeah. The chicken's in there. Like I said, I think there's like some kind of gravy and cheese mixture, which is it sounds a little iffy, but I think it's chicken gravy that's in there. So you mix that all up. There's the broccoli in there. And then the stuffing on top is just stovetop stuffing, which I can't tell you the last time I had that. Because my mom's just not like a big like stovetop person.
Yeah.
But like, it was so good. I actually had some for leftovers for dinner tonight.
Oh.
And the biggest test is when you have leftovers, is it just as good the next morning? And Absolutely. This thing is right there. It's right there. You put that in for about 2 minutes, get it nice and warm, and you take that bite, and it just like warms up around like your chest. Like, you know that feeling I'm talking about?
Oh my God. Yeah,
the best.
I might need a moment. Yeah, honestly, I could spend the next 40 minutes just talking about this casserole. So,
yeah, it's great. We might have to bring her on and have her talk about it because, she knows the ins and outs of it, but it's pretty fantastic.
We could do, like, casserole PR. We just rank the top casseroles, like, in-depth breakdowns. I mean, that's maybe future show ideas because we're going to be without good sports coming up here not too far away.
Yeah, we're going to be back to where we were in March again.
It's just trying to get some show filler ideas, so yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But so let's get into some hockey talk here. Obviously, we were talking earlier in the show. It seems like when Dave's not here, it's a very hockey heavy show. When you're not here, it's usually baseball heavy. So let's get into some baseball or some hockey talk here. Last week we kind of went over it a little bit, but the Pittsburgh Penguins made a couple hires over the last week. Todd Reirden was brought back as an assistant coach with Mike Sullivan, and they also promoted their Wilkes-Barre Scranton head coach, Mike Vellucci. Zach, what did you think of these deals?
So I think they kind of cover their tracks in two ways. And it's funny, on the Pens of Anarchy podcast, not a big deal, we had about 2 weeks ago, we literally said after the Caps fired Todd Reirden that he would be back in Pittsburgh. Just because we had a hunch. And then sure enough, what was the actual quote that Jim Rutherford, not even 30 minutes after Reirden got let go in Washington, was on the phone with him about bringing him back? So that's a move we absolutely nailed. But I think that they kind of cover two bases here. I think that Sullivan has been talked about as kind of a yes man in the way he commands, like his coaches just kind of go along with what he said. So I think Reardon's kind of that guy. I mean, for good or for bad, I mean, Reirden can run a power play, and I definitely think that that's going to be one of his main focal points and one of the main reasons he's back here. I mean, obviously, as mentioned before, the Penguins like to you know, be buddy-buddy and get the gang back together from time to time. So I think it's that on top of, you know, Reardon can coach a power play, so they will get that. I think this will largely benefit Chris Letang, too, because he's been an absolute head case for the last 2 years. I mean, I'm probably in the minority. I'm not a big Chris Letang guy, but I think Reardon can have an impact on him and at least kind of get through. And maybe, I know Letang's stubborn and doesn't want to change his game, but at least put some pressure on him to just kind of adapt. I mean, I think, you know, being that Letang's 33, the legs are going to be going here soon if they haven't started already, and he's not going to be that number one D guy that he still thinks he is. So that said, I think Reardon will help in that department. Vellucci, I think I like to see them going with guys that are still inside the organization and or, you know, haven't been around a ton. I know Vellucci helped coach some junior teams and, you know, some prominent players there. But in terms of like recycled NHL coaches, et cetera. But that said, I think he kind of challenges Sullivan because I think that he could be the successor should the Penguins get off to a rocky start. So I think it's kind of good to have him there. It's kind of like almost having a goalie 1A and 1B. I think that Vellucci will challenge Sullivan just merely for the fact of his presence being there. So I like it. I still think they'll bring in another coach prior to the season. But yeah, I mean, I don't hate the moves. Like I said, we fully expected Reardon to rejoin the Penguins, and I don't see that as good or bad. If he can even help that power play increase even slightly, I call it a win. But Vellucci, I think, is a good move and will definitely keep Sullivan on his toes and hopefully, you know, not get too complacent.
Yeah, I think the Reardon one's interesting just because I don't think Reardon was here under Rutherford's watch, correct?
I didn't know if there was a year or two overlap there, but
I don't think so. I think he went out with Bilesma, and they because I thought Gary Agnew and Rick Tocchet were brought in together when Mike Johnston was hired.
That's right. I remember Gary Agnew and John Hines too. I believe
so. Yeah, I think he was on the staff or in Wilkes-Barre at least. But my point being there though is. I'm interested on the reason for the Reardon hiring. Because if we know Jim Rutherford the way we do, when he makes big decisions like these, whether it's on the coaching staff or making a big splash of a trade, he always does his homework. And I wonder if he went back and said, okay, the best years of Chris Letang's career, per se, may not have been the cup years because he was absent from 2017, but he was up for Norris. The power play pre-Phil Kessel was at its very best when Todd Reardon was commanding the power play. So I'm wondering if the front office really did their homework on that. The Mike Vellucci one, I agree with you, is 100%. This might be like a, hey, Sully, your seat's a little hot. And this organization has a history of bringing in their minor league head coach to come in and take the NHL job. But the only thing with Vellucci that I'm worried about is that is going to be a tough group to command as the quote unquote offensive coordinator or guy that runs the forwards. So I'm very curious on how that's going to go, because the last time they brought in a guy that really didn't have NHL experience, this forward group kind of chewed him up a little bit. That's including Mark Recchi and Mike Johnson as a head coach for that matter. So that's the only one that concerns me, is I kind of wish there was a little bit more of a pedigree to run the forwards. But, you know, maybe we might get surprised here. But I just know how these forwards are, that when you have 87, 71, they're kind of set in their ways and you have to game plan through them. And I'm very curious how they're going to respond to a guy that has very little NHL experience.
So that I agree with your point there, for sure. And as mentioned, I think even Rutherford admitted that they do want to bring in another assistant coach, or at least wouldn't rule it out. So I think that while that guy might not be the focal point of the forwards, just another person that could at least command respect behind the bench and at least work in collaboration with Vellucci on that. So the other point I had, and I don't know if you saw the piece by Rob Rossi in The Athletic today, it's looking like Rutherford is gauging Letang's trade interest, his trade value. And, you know, I don't hold much stock into that. I I truly think Chris Letang will be here at least for the next 2 years until his contract's up, and then maybe, you know, 1 or 2 years elsewhere. But I know he really wants to retire at Penguin, but this seems like the first year that like any of those like rumors really have like some legs. Not so much with teams being associated, but just with the thought that Rutherford is actually shopping. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. And I hear people say that you can't win a Letang deal, you know, just because he's kind of part of the core. I tend to disagree, but maybe that's my bias about regarding Chris Letang. But I think he's one of the most skilled people, one of the most skilled defensemen in the league. But his awareness for me, man, I still have PTSD from last year, game one against the Isles in overtime, just carrying the puck in 1-on-3, just tries to shoot it in, gets blocked. And I think it was Josh Bailey that just went down the other way and scored in overtime. Like, just moments like that stand out to me. Like I said, great player, but just some of his decision-making, man, just jams me up.
So before I answer your trade talk with Chris Letang, I kind of have my own opinion on this. The one thing I'll always say with what you just said about Chris Letang, I agree 100%. He has those moments where you're just like, what the hell are we doing? My version of that is game four against the Canadians in the abysmal series we watched this year. And your own goaltender doesn't have a stick and he tries to go up the middle of the ice to make a stretch pass with like two Canadians right there, and his goaltender doesn't have a stick. But having said that, the one thing I always say about Chris Letang is you got to take the good with the bad, right?
I feel like I'm taking a lot of bad than good lately, but yes, I agree with what you're
saying.
Well,
look at some of the past moments that he's had. I mean, he scored the game-winning goal of the 2016 Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, that's a big goal in Penguin playoff history. I mean, that's what I mean by take the good with the bad. He does have some very good moments. He has some very bad moments. And you got to kind of meet him in the middle a little bit where, yeah, he'll have a turnover. But, you know, he's also at times the quarterback of your power play. Or he's part of that core that, you know, maybe he's that voice in the locker room as well. So there's a lot of stuff there with Chris Letang that I'm not ready to give up on personally. And as for the trade talk, we dealt with this with Phil Kessel for 3 years. I just don't see it happening until I see it happen.
Yeah, I got you. And like I said, I don't expect them to deal him. But for those that say they can't deal him because he's Chris Letang, I disagree with that. I just don't. He's had big moments on this team, you know, and his bright moments have been really bright, but his bad moments have been really bad. And I think that it's one of those things where, you know, just because he's been a part of three cups doesn't, I think loyalty buys you something, but when you're trying to maximize the Crosby Malkin era, because it is their era, Letang is kind of just he's part of it, but it's about those two guys. Same with like Fleury. I mean, he was a valuable part of the core, but at the end of the day, he was expendable and it was a move that had to be made. I'm not saying I'm fully there with Letang yet, but I also, I could see it happening at some point.
So let me ask you this. You said you have a lot of, what was the term, PTSD on Chris Letang.
Correct.
Turnovers or certain plays and stuff. Do you get that same thing with Evgeny Malkin? Because they're kind of in the same boat a little bit with me. Because Gino has those moments too. He's right there where, you know, he maybe gets rubbed off a puck where he's maybe not playing too well. And he goes down and he hacks a guy on the ankle. And, you know, the other team scores a power play goal. So, like, you give Gino that same kind of treatment?
Yeah, 100%. I've actually been one of the being a fellow Russian myself, I tend to gravitate towards Malkin over Crosby if I had to pick one of the two-headed monster. I mean, luckily you don't have to do that here, but I'm Team Gino, but I will say some of his mistakes and more or less mental lapses are absolutely incredible and ill-timed. I think it was one of the most recent ones, and I'm sure there's several other that have occurred, but I think it was last year. Penguins are down by one against the Hurricanes. They're digging hard late in the third, and he takes an offensive zone slashing penalty. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like right. You're an idiot. Right. And I know that's happened against Boston. All you need to do is get him off his game, and you'll certainly draw a penalty.
case in point, not to cut you off, but I don't know if you remember the 24/7 Road to the Winter Classic that they did for the Penguins Capitals, but they showed Bruce Boudreau in the video room with the Capitals before they played the Penguins that pre-Winter Classic game they do every year, and they said, don't even bother with Crosby. Don't even try and get under his skin because you're just not going to get there. You're just going to pound your head against the cement wall. Now, the big guy, 71, you keep leaning on him, you keep leaning on him. It might take a period and a half, but eventually it's gonna snap, and then we're going to be in business. So, like, there's your point right there is that, you know, we saw firsthand, granted it was 10 years ago, but I think that definitely still holds up today.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just saying, I think if the Penguins were to trade, I won't even say Crosby. If they were to trade one of Malkin or Letang, because I'm just trying to use core guys, I see it being Letang.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think that's anywhere in question. I'm not disagreeing with that. I just don't see it happening.
I think, yeah, like I said, I don't see it happening this year, but I wouldn't rule it out in the future. I guess my thing is, and maybe I was so stoked about John Marino last year, but I almost feel like I could anoint him as a number one defenseman, or at least give him a chance. I mean, I know that's a huge increase in volume, and I know about the sophomore slump and whatnot, but I think if the offer is right, and a return for Letang in terms of a trade, I don't even know where to start. I mean, that's Rutherford's job, not mine. But I would assume top prospect, definitely an NHL-ready, capable player, if not a good player. And then maybe something else along the lines, whether that be another pick or, you know, something. But, you know, I feel like the Penguins could use that to sign at least a serviceable guy, you know, to play the blue line. But like I said, I don't expect it to happen. I'm just saying for those people that think that's a no-win situation when you trade Letang, I think that I think the deal could be had. It just needs to be right.
Geez, where are we going to go with this? So we can agree that, yeah, Letang's the guy that's going to go. It's just a matter of if it happens and where he would go, because he has that limited no move as well, too, which makes that even tougher. It's what, 18 teams he can say no to or that he's willing to go to.
Hopefully, he has the Florida Panthers on not on the list, so that way, you know, anyone that goes to Florida is severely overrated, like Letang. So that'd be nice.
That would be. So, is there anything else you want to talk about with the coaching additions or any changes you would like to see done in the off season?
I think honestly, the next domino to fall is going to be the goalie trade. You know, it's inevitable at this point. I lean towards the Penguins keeping Tristan Jarry, but you know, there's always a little part of me that's scared about Jim Rutherford, who could see, you know, Murray won two cups, goalies peak later in life or later in their careers, and then keep Murray. I don't think it happens, but it worries me. And that said, I guess that's the next domino to fall. And I think that return will largely see if the Penguins can get in the second round for the draft this upcoming October. And then also, you know, not saying the Penguins, like I said, I don't think the Penguins will deal with Tang, but I mean, depending on that return could be the next question that might need answered.
Who's your front runner? You saw the list of teams that that's in the running for Matt Murray. Did you have anybody that stuck out for you?
So to be honest with you, I think he goes to the Maple Leafs with his familiarity with Dubas and the system and whatnot. But I know they have to unload Frederick Anderson first, which I think could be an issue for Toronto. The other team I saw, and I think it kind of showed its head a little bit, is I think the Colorado Avalanche at least expressed some interest, and I could see Matt Murray out there.
Yeah, they're my front runner right now. Because if you're Joe Sakic or even the ownership group or the front office of the Colorado Avalanche, you've seen what 29 can do. You've seen what Nathan MacKinnon can do and pretty much will a team to at least a 7-game series where you have an opportunity to win a series. It's safe to say that I would say goaltending lost them that series. I might not have lost them every game, but that's the reason they were down 3-1 in that series. They just didn't have goaltending. So if I'm them, I think they work a sign and trade with Rutherford, where if you can get it to a reasonable number, because they have cap coming down the road with McCarr and some other guys. McKinnon's ticket's going to be pretty big because he took a discount. If they can work a sign and trade, I'm willing to bet that he would go there, because they have to capitalize on this core that they have in Colorado in the worst way. And what better? How excited would you be if you're a Colorado Avalanche fan and you see you have a two-time Stanley Cup champion goaltender who played in front of a similar style team that is very skilled, they possess the puck a lot, and they score a lot, and you have a two-time Stanley Cup winning goaltender coming to play goal for you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If I'm Colorado, I'm stoked. And I mean, I think this is just one of those things. And I haven't been the biggest Murray guy as of late, but I just think a change of scenery would help him so much. I think he helped. He was obviously going to be an important part of Penguins history when it's all said and done. But I think a change of scenery would be great for him. And yeah, I agree. They are going to have a pretty long window with how young their core is. And I also think that when you look at their goaltending situation now, what is it? Grubauer and Frank who?
Francois. I think that name changes every week. And then it's Michael Hutchinson too, which let's not kid ourselves here.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at that caliber team and you see that goaltending situation, I kind of cringe a little bit. And let's say Murray never rebounds to be what he was in Pittsburgh in 16 and 17. At least you went out and got the name that did it before. So, yeah, I definitely think Colorado makes sense as a landing spot for him.
Yeah, I think that one, the Toronto one, I'm not sold on. I just think that might be just media trying to keep Toronto moves relevant and get clicks in the offseason. But, yeah, Colorado, I think, is a big one. A lot of people have been saying Minnesota, and I'm really interested. Is Devin Dubnyk's contract up out there?
I'm not entirely sure. I guess I never, like, consider them a front runner. Let me check out their contract. Can you just babble for a few more seconds?
Yeah, but I mean, I can't tell if it's a Devin Dubnyk is the reason they're not being successful, or if it's, well, Bill Guerin knows Jim Rutherford, dealt a lot with Matt Murray in the days Murray was very good. Maybe he can get a restart on him. But I just don't understand the Minnesota factor in that, because I think that team's a long ways away before they're going to start buying again. So
he is signed for one more year. He is signed through the 2021 campaign with a $4.3 million cap hit.
Man, because what do we think Murray's contract's going to look like? What figure do you think he's going to get?
Something tells me he could have got 7 to 7.5 had he at least been remotely decent this year, but I think he gravitates towards 6, 6.5.
So, I mean, you're looking at another team spending almost $10 million on goaltending.
Yeah, pretty
much. For another year. And if you're Minnesota, do you want to deal with that? I feel like any team that's gonna bring Matt Murray in is going to have to be, you're our guy, you're the number one guy, no ifs, ands, or buts.
The thing is, and I'm not about to pretend like I know Minnesota's farm system, but I still feel like they're a few years off of competing, like, legitimately every year.
Right, yeah, I feel like they're almost, like, rebuilding on the fly, almost. Like, they're not fully in rebuild mode, but they're not also, like, a contender either. They're kind
of
like
they're one of those middle-of-the-road
teams. Kind of a hopeful, yeah, like a hopeful almost.
I saw the Senators were linked to Matt Murray, too, and I don't think that makes any sense. I just, like, Ottawa's so damn bad, and it almost makes Matt Murray look good. Like, I just don't see that being a fitting spot, and to be honest with you, Ottawa probably has 1,000 picks, but I don't know. I don't think the move makes sense for them, to be honest.
Yeah, I just don't get it with them. Ottawa, same thing. I don't know. I think it's gonna end up being a contending team that really needs goaltending. And right now, Colorado is the team that I think fits that perfectly. So, anybody else you want to kind of break down a little bit with the Penguins, or?
I mean, that's pretty much it. I'm sure.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Have you heard these ideas coming out of Fleury coming back?
I listened to Mark Madden the other day because I saw him tease something on Twitter about it. The thing is, it's one of those nostalgia moves again. But I legitimately think it would make sense. But so much needs to happen for that to happen.
Yeah,
they'd have to buy him out, right? They'd have
right.
To
have to yeah, you're out. Not taking that contract. There's no way Vegas is going to eat enough of it, anyways. They have to buy him out. The only thing I worry about is you're getting into a whole thing again with who's your starting goaltender. And I don't know about you, but I'm sick of the Penguins having this whole 1A, 1B. I want a starting goaltender that every night I'm going to PPG Paints Arena when I'm allowed to again, that I know who's in net. You know, for a big part of my childhood through the 90s, I knew Barrasso was in net, no ifs, ands, or buts. And if Reggett was in net, something was wrong. And halfway through the 2000s, you knew Fleury was in net. And if he wasn't, something was wrong. So I want that back with the Penguins. I want to know who my starting goaltender is every night without any question at all.
I definitely see what you're saying, but I think a return for Fleury wouldn't necessarily be, oh my God, goalie controversy, cue the music that they do on 93.7 The Fan. I don't think it would just mean 100% goalie controversy. I think almost him coming back is he accepts the role that he'll be a backup. And honestly, I think going with Tristan Jarry says a lot about, like I said, Jarry was ahead of Murray in the system for so long. It just seems as of late that he got his path cleared to, be that guy. And I mean, it definitely helps that Murray faltered. It made the decision all the more easier, but I think Fleury coming back. You could see how years past it could be a starting role, but I think for him just to be back. And I feel like he's that kind of guy that would just want to be back and be here. And to be honest with you, I think that Sullivan, as he has his allegiances, I think he would go with Jarry because, I could tell even I don't know if that would carry over from years past, but he never really seemed like he'd be the one going to Fleury unless absolutely necessary.
I mean, here's what I'll say about Mike Sullivan. I love Mike Sullivan as a head coach, what he's done here. It just scares me because he did also have success with Fleury in years past, and he has yet to get that confidence in Tristan Jarry when it's mattered. So that's the only thing, is that, we saw what he did with Matt Murray in the playoffs this year, is that Matt Murray was his guy and that he was willing to die on that hill. Is he willing to say, Tristan Jarry, you're getting 45, 50 games this year and Marc-Andre Fleury is getting the other 70 or whatever?
But the beautiful thing about this is if Matt Murray gets traded, then you don't have to go to Matt Murray anymore, which I think almost handicaps Mike Sullivan to the point that he'll probably hate it for a while. He'll probably be trying to put Murray in a game that he's not even playing in. But
he calls the Colorado head coach, "Hey, you got Muzzin tonight?"
but exactly though, I think that this puts the Penguins in a it almost lets Mike Sullivan see what he has, because he's so used to just being I don't know who to go to. Matt Murray.
Muzz, where you at?
Yeah, legit, I almost feel like he almost feels like out of a force of habit that it's to start Murray, because that's who he won with in the past. And like I said, I understand allegiances, but they don't hold forever. And I think that, by not having Matt Murray, he can truly see what he has in Tristan Jarry. And then if they do bring back Fleury, it's like, well, damn, I hate to use the term 1A, 1B, but you have a very, very reliable backup.
Yeah, that is true. And you're probably going to get him dirt cheap, too. If he gets bought out, I think I heard the figure is 8-3. Does that sound right?
That sounds right, because it's – yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I think it's around 8-3. So then Rutherford comes in and say, hey, we'll throw you an extra mil if you come here. Just be easy on the cap on us. Yeah, I mean, he's already getting his 8 mil to not play in Vegas.
And you act like Marc-Andre Fleury would turn down a return to Pittsburgh.
Right. Like, that's the thing. Like, the minute that buyout is, if there's Vegas odds, it's like minus 50,000 that he comes back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that if the Penguins even, like, remotely wanted his services, he would make it work. He probably knows he could get more money and start somewhere else. But I think Marc-Andre Fleury is one of the most, like, loyal black and gold people I could ever have ever, like, seen in my entire life. And I'm not saying that that's going to get him here for sure. I just think that if he even has an inkling or a want to return, it could happen just because of what he'll do.
And you know what? The Penguins could even say, hey, if you just want to take a 2-year deal here, ride out the window with your buds or whatever. And then if you want to go win, we'll let you go. Like, we'll say, okay, that's it. We'll let you go. Go win another cup somewhere. Or if he just says, you know what? I got my 3 cups. I'm good. Let's just ride in the sunset with the boys. Yeah, there's a lot of options that you could have there if you're him after, if Vegas does him a solid and buys him out.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And like I said, a lot needs to happen, but if Vegas buys him out, that's the biggest step in this entire equation.
So let's move on. Let's get into the super fun part of the show now. Let's do some playoff recaps here. Do we want to start with the good stuff, or do we want to get into Game 7 first?
Let's get into Game 7. Let's get into Game 7.
Okay, so we had 3 Game 7s that happened over the weekend. The first one that got kicked off, which naturally everybody's going to just destroy the NHL on this. The Colorado Avalanche and Dallas Stars played, I believe, at like 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock, yep.
Friday afternoon on USA, which, like, everybody who hates the NHL was just all over them. Like, how could it be at 4:30? And how can it be on USA? Part of me is just like, guys, the NBA is on like TNT, for God's sakes. Like, it's been on TNT for like forever. Nobody ever says anything about that. You know, it's not like they're on OLN anymore. Like the Outdoor Life Network or Versus, for God's sakes.
Versus.
Like it's clearly a branch of the NBC Corporation or whatever, and they threw them on one of their alternate channels because they had to. And second of all, we've been seeing games as early as like 11 o'clock during these playoffs. It's an uncommon time for playoffs, so just stop. Just stop there. This game ended 5-4 in overtime. Probably the most entertaining series that was going so far in these playoffs, right?
Oh, for sure. I think like I said, have an issue with cable up here, but this is definitely one I was trying to catch up on. Just because Colorado had been, like, you know, favored for the cup, and their core is just so young and so good, and Nathan McKinnon can single-handedly carry a team. So they are just legitimately fun to watch.
Yeah, and like we talked about with the whole Matt Murray thing, goaltending is the one thing that they're just missing. It's the one thing. I think everything else part of their team, the depth was there. It didn't show up in the series. It was definitely the Nathan McKinnon show. But the depth scoring, once they can get that more on a consistent basis come playoff time, I think this team's set once they get their goaltender. And I don't think Philip Grubauer is the answer. I don't think Francois or Frances, whatever the hell the guy's name is, I don't think he's the answer either. I think they have to go out and get a number one goaltender and find a way to keep it cheap. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think they win this entire series had they not been so banged up? I mean, Landeskog was out. Johnson was out. Donskoy, who scored a big goal against the Penguins back in 2016. I know he's still like one of those role play guys that's just crazy. And F Matt Calvert, but apparently he was out too.
Yeah, I didn't realize that like Landeskog and Donskoy were out too. Donskoy, like you said, he's scored some big goals on the playoffs for the Sharks way back when. But yeah, I think if they're healthy, I think definitely Colorado wins this series, and I think they win it maybe in six. It may not have gone seven, but I think the goaltending was the biggest handicap for them, though.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why Matt Murray will look so good in an Habs jersey next year.
Absolutely. Put him in 33 for Patrick Waugh, too. But anyway, so back and forth game. There's goaltending all over the place, or goal scored all over the place. The winning goal, though, given up by Colorado is a Y-I-K-E-S. Yikes. What happened on that defensive coverage?
It almost looked like I was watching Jack Johnson and Justin Schultz just kind of go behind the net, and I had flashbacks. But yeah, you would think in such a pivotal,
wow, get it out, Jesus, big word.
Pivotal moment in a game like that, and the dude is literally roasting marshmallows in front of the net. Like what? This is game seven to go to the Western Conference Finals. I even looked, like, we were watching the game outside having a few brews, and I was like, that's not good. Like, this series ends like that. I wanted it to end in far more dramatic fashion. I mean, granted, it was overtime, but, like, not that goal, not that time. Like, that was a lapse and a half.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up the winning goal here, because I'll dive Kale McCarr's on the ice, and you just compared them to Justin Schultz and Jack Johnson, but
play better.
Just play better. It's just so easy. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough way to lose, but that's why playoff overtime is great, because that's all it takes is one little fall asleep by the D, and next thing you know, pucks in the back of your net, and your season's over. So, Dallas moves on. I don't know if they can beat Vegas. I know they took game one. I just don't know if they're quite there yet. I think it's because I need to see more from Sagan or Ben. I don't think they're playing quite as well as what it shows. And until I see a guy like Tyler Sagan take over a series, I don't know if they can get past Vegas.
Yeah, I agree with that. And this might be a very hot take, but I'm going to say it here because if I get attacked, then it's whatever. I always felt like Tyler Seguin is definitely a really good player, but he always reminded me of someone that needed to be surrounded by, like, a better player. Like, he's a good, like, 1B player, so to speak. I know I hate that phrase, like I said, but, like, I just feel like he needs someone that complements him. And I've never seen the hype with Jamie Benn. He's a good two-way forward, but nothing, like, blows me out of the water. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. No, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'd love to see Tyler Seguin with, like, not like a Sidney Crosby, but just someone that can get him the puck, and at least, like, I feel like he's doing all the work and trying to score the goals, too. Like, I'd legit love to see him, like, you know, be on one of these, like, Washington or Pittsburgh offenses and see, you know, what his career would look like and how he would do when he doesn't have to worry about doing kind of everything.
Yeah, the one thing with Tyler Seguin that I was going to say is, is he not Zach Parise?
I think
Zach Parise, not necessarily his style of game, but, like, the type of player Zach Parise is when it comes to, like, who he's around. Like, he gets the team there, but not necessarily over that hump, almost. Like, he needs that extra, like you said, maybe, like, a playmaker or someone to get him the puck on a consistent basis where he doesn't have to dictate play. And Zach Parise is kind of the same way. Like, you saw what he was able to do in Jersey and even in Minnesota. But just imagine if he had, like, that legit center to get him the puck in the right spots, because he'll find those right spots. It's just a matter of somebody getting him the puck there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect comparison. I will say, thank God that Tyler Seguin isn't signed for, like, 15 more years. I think Parise legit has, like, 6 years on the deal, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is like, Penguin fans were like, come on, Zach, get here. Come on, sign here.
Being all in. I remember looking at, like, old Twitter, and, like, Josh Yoey would tweet something about, like, oh, you know, like, someone met with Parise and Suter's reps, because they were a package deal almost. In this
Yeah, sense. Pretty much.
And I remember being all in on the watch. And I mean, at the time, like, the Penguins, like, you know, it was kind of like good free agent. Penguins got him. Good trade. Penguins got him. So, like, at the, like, now, thank God we didn't get them. But, like, you know, at the time, that was the hype.
Yeah. Every July 1st, it was just like, insert got top free agent here. Watch. Mm-hmm. Just like oh, 1 year, Kessler it was Preuss watch. Jager watch. It was host. Well, that. It was Hossa was pre hashtag insert player watch, but yeah, I just yeah, thank God they didn't end up getting that getting a deal done with Zach Parise.
We would have bought him out already. We would have used our compliance on him.
Oh no! I mean, if they haven't bought out Jack Johnson, you really think they would have bought out Zach Parise? They still would have been trying to hammer him in the lineup every night.
Well, the bright side about Zach Parise is that he would have taken up that money that they wouldn't have had. They wouldn't have been able to sign Jack Johnson.
That's a good point. So we could have really avoided a lot. Yeah, yeah, we could have avoided a lot of things, but yeah. So Dallas moves on. They won 5-4 in overtime. Like we said, this one had a 9 goals, which it seems like you when you think of Game 7, you would never get something like that. But it was nice to get that many goals in what's supposed to be a tight game. So, moving on that night on the regular NBC NBCSN that everybody's used to at 9 o'clock or whatever the hell time this game started, so everybody was happy again. The Vegas Golden Knights took on the Vancouver Canucks, and it seemed like it was finally the inevitable that the Knights finally took over and just kind of squashed the little gnat that was the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, that was a damn close game. I think it was 0-0 all the way up to 6 minutes left in the third, and yeah, Vegas got on the board first, and they added 2 empty netters. I think honestly that series was way closer than I had imagined, like I thought it could be. But that said, that's not any insult to Vancouver. I almost felt like Vegas was, you know, playing down a little bit. And they did lose Ryan Reeves in Game 7 after he destroyed Mott's applesauce. He was going for the puck and just got absolutely leveled. I think they called it a check to the head, and I call it Mott being too short. So, yeah, Vegas had to kill off that 5-minute power play. And, yeah, I think Vancouver mustered up like 3 shots, maybe. The shots were so lopsided up until the very end of the game.
Yeah, I got the shots prepared here.
Please share.
The Vegas has the advantage in every one. 11-2, 10-4, and 15-8. Keep in mind, again, like you said, Vancouver did have a 5-minute power play at one point. That gives you a total of 36-14 for your game total.
Okay, 36-14. Yeah, still really lopsided. I guess I thought it got a little closer towards the end. But that said, I think Vancouver is going to be good very soon, sooner rather than later. I don't think that they're going to win a cup or anything in the next year or two, but I think they're going to at least start having more deep runs, and I think this is just the beginning of it. They have a fun, exciting team, but see to figure some things out and make some adjustments, but I like the Canucks being there for years to come.
Yeah, have you been hearing the comparison that they're very similar to, like, the Chicago Blackhawks of the early 2010s?
I haven't heard that, but it does make sense. I mean, you know, the similar play style, similar, like, how they draft and development and so on. So, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, that one always caught me by surprise. I was like, yeah, I could see it. But yeah, so that was that series. Vegas... I think that might have been their wake-up call, and I think this is what's going to push them forward to possibly winning a Stanley Cup. I don't know if they're going to pull out through the whole thing, but I think a series like that can kind of give you a gut check, like, okay, boys, it's not going to be that easy the way that we got through the first two rounds. So I'm interested to see how they look in the conference final here against Dallas. So. Moving forward, our final Game 7, this is going to be a fun one. I can't wait to talk about this. The New York Islanders beat the Philadelphia Flyers 4-0 in Game 7. Those pesky Philadelphia Flyers, because, you know, everybody said, oh, this team looks good. They look great in the round robin when nobody gives a hell. they look so good. Kevin Hayes is the greatest player ever. He's definitely making that $49 million contract they signed him to. Claude Giroux finally scored, and now he became the best player in the world again for 2 minutes. This game just wasn't even close. I mean, the Islanders did what the Islanders do. They held the Flyers. Game 7. This sounds so much like the Bosma-era Penguins in a Game 7. They held the Flyers to 16 shots on goal in a Game 7. What a gutless performance by the Philadelphia Flyers. Completely gutless, and we get another year of making fun of them for not winning a cup in the last 45 years.
I was going to say, and I will take full responsibility because I was one of those believers that said, damn, Philly looks good. Like, man, Kevin Hayes is the best player in the league. Like, holy shit, watch out for this team. But then it just, they got stomped. Like, that was embarrassing. 16 shots on net. They couldn't muster up anything. Claude Giroux has one playoff goal in his last 25 games, but yet that fat-ass Sam Carcidi said pass the baton years ago. Like, it's absolutely incredible, like, that I think the Flyers are way, well, obviously, the Flyers are a way younger team than the Penguins, and, like, their fans try to use that as a weapon, but yet, like, they haven't won shit, and, like, they're not going to for the foreseeable future because they just don't have any playoff-caliber guys that step up when it actually matters. It's truly incredible, and I admit that I'm doing a full heel turn on what I said, but
love the heel turn. Keep turning
it on. It was absolutely embarrassing what happened with them. And just when you think Carter Hart or Kata Hart has like an incredible run, I do think he made 50.
He's a fraud. Like, let's just say it now. He's a fraud. And everybody wants to say, oh, well, he's young. He's a goaltender of the future. They finally have a goaltender for the first time since Ron Hextall. He's not. He's a fraud. Okay, yeah, I don't mean to sound like Trump because I'm kind of waving my hands like our president right now, but he's a fraud, okay? He's a fraud because if you want to be a legit goaltender in this league, this is a game you steal. You don't give up a goal 10 minutes into game
second
7.
Second shot of the game.
The second shot of the game goes in. And then right after that, not too far, because I believe the goals weren't that far apart in the first period. Pulling it up right now. First goal was at 9:27. The second goal by Andy Green, that old bastard. He scored, assisted by Derek Brassard, which I'll get to him in a second here. The next goal was scored at 13:12 of the first period. So he let up two goals in a span of 4 minutes of each other. So don't tell me he's the future of the Flyers. He's going to win the Flyers a cup. He's the next Ron Hextall. F you, F him, F Claude Giroux, F Sam Carcini. The baton stays in Pittsburgh. F off. Like, I'm just tired of hearing about the Flyers and how close they are. They're so close. No, until they blow it up and they really rebuild, because that core is just so bad. The fact that they think Jake Voracek can still be a part of that core is a joke. They took too many men penalties in Game 7 as well. That was also hilarious. Like, how do you do that? And they pulled their goaltender with 6 minutes and 30 seconds left to try and get back in the game in the third period. The team stinks. They're not close. Just everybody just calm the hell down on Philadelphia because they're just not close.
Make icy takes great again. That is, speaking of Trump, you absolutely have my endorsement on everything you just said. I will say, though, and I know you said you'll get to Derek Brassard, but, like, I look at this Islanders team, man, and I look at – is Barry Trotz that just that good of a coach? Like they don't have a superstar. I don't think Barzell's playing out of his mind, but every series they just – they look great, and I don't understand it.
Is it not just and I'm going to throw this out here. I might get roasted for this comparison. Do you remember those, like, Buffalo teams in, like, the – like, right after the lockout? Like, Danny Briere, Derek Roy, Jason Pominville. Like, they didn't have a superstar there. They just had a lot of good players. You know what I mean? Like, there was no – weak link, and that's kind of who they remind me of. Maybe not the style of play that they play, but they have guys that can put up numbers, but, like, you're not going to look on their stat lines and be like, oh, they had a 30-goal scorer here. All right, here we go. That's clearly their star. That's not the type of team they're trying to be. They're just trying to be a team that comes out, works hard every night, and until they get that job done. And I think maybe them losing the way they did last year, that's why they have – the momentum that they do, is because they're just kind of like, the job's just not done.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I can't honestly wait until they get like a good player on that team. Can you imagine like this unit, that coach, and then like they bring in someone else that's even better? Like, and that's not even saying what they might still do this year going into the Eastern Conference Finals. So,
yeah, I mean, it's crazy that they're, because how long can that still be a thing? And I think that's going to be something that management's going to have to talk to Matt Barzell about, because I believe he's an RFA at the end of the year, is A, convincing him to stay there and having to work under that system, because I'm sure for him, like, it's got to be tough to be seeing all these superstars, young superstars around the league playing this freewheel play, you know, up and down action, getting their points, and then Barzell's having to play 200 feet and having to go out and continually work hard at both ends of the ice and kind of play a little bit more defense than what Nathan MacKinnon has to, or a guy like Connor McDavid has to.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, that's a good comparison, because it's like Barzell is Sidney Crosby under Mike Johnson, just completely handicapped, playing full zone to zone, end to end, and just, you know, obviously your production stunts and you put up minutes where half of it's you're chasing. It's crazy. And I absolutely think that that'll catch up, whether that be him finding a new team or just, you know, grit and bear through it, we'll get you some help or something along those lines.
So to get back to the series real quick, I did mention the aforementioned Derek Brassard. I am disappointed in you and Dave, by the way, because I know why Dave didn't answer, because Dave hates answering stuff when I'm right about things on this show. I believe I called that the Islanders would win in five, and that Brassard was going to, I think, get the winning goal. I think, did I say that?
You did call Brassard winning goal, because I said that's bold.
And I said it was bold. And sure enough, what does that guy do? He puts me in the greatest spot ever, because the Islanders are down 3-1. Looks like the Flyers are just going to soak this away in game five, go on to game six. It's going to be an easy walk-in. Well, you know, they get a three. The Islanders make it 3-2. And then sure enough, big game Brass shows his head and he scores a tying goal. And I texted our group and I said, big game Brass, with about 9 billion exclamation points. And I got nothing back. Nothing back. Again, like I said, Dave, I'm not a shocker at, because Dave hates answering my texts when I'm dead right, especially when it's about the Pirates or when I make a call on the Penguins or anything like that. But
that's probably because I was intoxicated. Otherwise, I would have answered you.
Oh, okay. All right. But anyways, big game Brasso. In the last three games against Philadelphia, he had a goal, and assist, and then an assist. So he came around when it mattered most here. So maybe the it was the Penguins that screwed him up. It was the Penguins that screwed the Penguins, not Derek Brassard screwing the Penguins.
Yeah, starting to think Brassard's a good guy, to be honest with you. Maybe he was just misunderstood.
I think he was. I still have the jersey, and probably the first game I go back to PPG Paints Arena, it'll be the big game Brass jersey.
I love it.
So moving on here, let's do our previews for the conference finals here. Each series had a game already played and won by a team. We'll go with the Knights and Stars. Dallas up 1-0 in the series. Zach, what are you expecting out of this? I don't know if it changes your idea of the series or not.
I was kind of surprised to see Dallas take game one, but I mean, I know the NHL rushed to start that, and I know they're trying to, you know, get these games in. That said, it's not going to change my final pick. I still think Vegas in six.
I think Vegas is just too deep. They're too fast. Mark Stone's playing on an unbelievable level right now. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it either. Shocker that Fleury played game one. I don't know if that's just a get me over with the agent again, but I like Vegas. I think it's a deep series, though.
Good call.
And then Eastern Conference, we got Tampa Bay and the Islanders. Tampa Bay took game one handily. I believe the score is 8-3. Does that change your idea of the series at all or anything?
It kind of does change my idea a little bit. I mean, I don't like Tampa, so I am vehemently rooting against them. But that said, that was a statement win. I will say I think that Tampa wins in seven. But I definitely, obviously it would go seven, but I definitely think the Isles make it a good series.
See, I'm going the other way around. I thought it'd be a lot closer because the Islanders would find a way to keep everything tight and keep games close. But the fact that Tampa was able to expose them as quickly as they were, I like Tampa in five.
Damn. Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see what adjustments are made and whatnot. But, I mean, just, you know, every time I go to count the Islanders out or think they don't have a shot in hell, they do something that I'm like, oh, well, okay. So I'm just trying to lean on the side of caution here.
Gotcha. I think that's going to be it for us. Do you got an MVP for the week, or are you going to?
Do I have an MVP for the week? I'm trying to think. Nothing sports-wise was an MVP. So, you know what? Just beer. Just give it to beer.
Just beer. And my MVP of the week is going to be, I'll call it bocce. And I don't mean the bocce that you play on the sand in the court. Like the official bocce. I'm talking bocce like in the backyard where you got to deal with like hills and all kinds of different grass cuts and everything like that. So,
ooh, off-road bocce.
Yeah, off-road bocce is what I'm going to go with. So that's my MVP of the week. This has been the Icy Takes Podcast with Big Dave, Zach, and Jeff. Dave should be back next week, hopefully a normal show as usual. You can follow us at Icy Takes on Twitter, Facebook. You can follow Dave at Big Dave_52.
Follow myself at ZachMorris82.
And you can follow me at JChrist_51. As Dave always likes to say, like our Lord and Savior, amen. You can join us next week for another episode on Tuesday. This will drop on Wednesday. And we got some big news coming down the pike here, folks. So stay tuned and stay icy, folks.